Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us in this latest edition of the OIES podcast series. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Mustafa Wiki, who is the Senior Research Fellow at the Natural Gas Programme at the OIES. And here we're going to be discussing the Institute's recently published paper, MENA, Could Intra-Regional Gas Trade Be Focused as a Result of Ongoing Global Crisis? Great name, Mustafa, great name. We are recording this podcast on the 5th of June, just to give us a timeline, because the world changes so much. When oil prices are $40 a barrel, European gas prices are $1.45 per MMBTU, that's TTF. And lastly, Asian spot prices are, believe it or not, $2.05 per MMBTU. Mustafa, great to see you. Thank you very much for joining us via this video link. Let's start this podcast at the beginning of your paper, in which you say that the development of regional or sub-regional natural gas networks within the Middle East and North Africa, MENA region, have remained elusive. So I think I'd like to ask you why, and if in your reply you could kindly define to us what area you mean by MENA, that would be fantastic. Mustafa, over to you. What do you think?
All right. Thank you, David. Starting with all these plans, it was part of the so-called economic integration initiatives for the MENA region. And as part of that initiative, the idea was to develop sub-regional energy grids, power, and natural gas. Focusing on natural gas, the idea of developing a sub-regional gas grid, especially in the GCC area, started as far as the 90s. And the barriers, I mean, if you want to talk about barriers right now, they were both political and economic. More recently, I would say last year, beginning of last year, January 2019, there was a renewed call for some sort of GCC gas integration. Interestingly, that did not include Qatar. But there was some hope that maybe there will be relaunch of this kind of gas grid or gas integration, but so far nothing has happened. And we haven't seen any development so far. So that's why it has been elusive for such a long time.
Yeah, it has.
Now, in terms of definition of the MENA region, it's a very vast and diverse region. And in geographical terms, it starts from Morocco on the Atlantic, and it takes you all the way to Iran in the Middle East, in the Gulf area. So that's what we define by MENA. So it's a very vast, and I would like to emphasize, diverse region.
That's a very interesting point, and I know that'll come out later in our discussions this afternoon. So the trade of natural gas within the region or sub-regions really is very limited or non-existent, but surely, you know, LNG, hasn't that opened up trade?
Yes, it has, to give you a quick reply. But the reason why it's limited, if you look at, we said it's a vast region, a region you and I know for a very long time has been, you know, considered as, you know, one of the largest area which holds the largest, among the largest gas reserves in the world, 40% at the time. But when you look at the gas exchange that is, you know, import and exports within the region, they have been very limited, you know, some connections in North Africa, some connection in the East Med, another connection in the Gulf area. So it has been very limited related to the potential that could be there. LNG. Now, I have to say that in my paper, I cover both LNG and cross-border pipelines. Yes, I think it's very important to underline the fact that in that region that has been marred by all kind of political tension, rivalry, etc., there is this notion of so-called security of supply, especially when you are in a climate of political tension, especially among neighbors. So LNG has provided that kind of flexibility, security of supply for countries who wanted to include or increase the share of natural gas in their balance. And the most important among them is Kuwait. which has increased its LNG import. It is building now, I think, maybe the largest LNG import terminal, of onshore LNG terminal. So yes, to answer your question, it has. But I have to say, cross-border pipeline also have their advantage. And if you look at the Dolphin Energy project, which has been going on since 2007, nothing has happened. There has been no interruption. And to me, maybe this is a sign of economic pragmatism in a region where you have a lot of political tension.
That's a very philosophical statement, which I'm sure will come out as we continue this podcast. Well, your paper usefully addresses some of the key factors that we should focus on over the next 5 years: market growth prospects, regional gas trade, price level, infrastructure, and, as you've just said, political will. Let's take these each in turn. So can we start by asking about the structure of gas demand in MENA?
Right. Now, if you look at MENA on an aggregate level, if you look at the statistic on aggregate level, I think even if you take it country by country, power, to which we have to add seawater desalination, is by far the dominant gas user. On aggregate level, it accounts for about 50% of the gas use. If you look at industries, and I include energy-intensive industries and oil and gas industries, if you look at all the industries, they account for about maybe 35% of the total gas use. So these are the major thing. There is I wouldn't call it odd, but something specific when it comes to residential. When you look at the aggregate figures, it accounts for 10%. And this is because the bulk of it is consumed in Iran and to a certain extent, Egypt and Algeria.
And actually, teaching the stuff, that's a good example as to how the countries in the MENA region are so different to each other, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm. So you have this demand structure. So I think that logically says, you know, how resilient is natural gas demand in MENA to the current situation we're experiencing with COVID-19 of reduced demand and low pricing? Again, I imagine the situation varies by country, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It varies by countries, but you have some common features. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, I go back to the power and seawater desalination. I have to include that because in the Gulf, it is an important part as well. But if you take the power sector in general, it is what I would call a socially sensitive sector. So, yes, you could say that it is resilient because, as I said, it's an important sector, a strategic sector, a socially sensitive sector. So I would say, to a certain extent, in the short to medium term, power will remain, will continue to evolve and grow. However, if you go outside the power sector, if you look at energy-intensive industries like aluminium, steel, and even cement, and to which you can add also petrochemicals and fertilizer, those are not energy-intensive, these are feedstock thing. These industries, in terms of gas use, will have some challenges. Why? Because these are mainly export-oriented industries. And what I mean by export-oriented industries that export outside the MENA region. Some of it is used locally, but outside the region. And now, with all the commotion, all the situation we have globally in terms of economic contraction, these industries are going to have some issues. And if I may add also, that could really launch, because right now I'm talking about short to medium term, but if you look at the impact, the long-term impact, that could have an impact on these industries, you know, the way they operate, and you could have some structural changes. So it's something to watch.
I think it certainly is a nice underestimate, I think, there. But, you know, all countries must be suffering from low oil prices and gas prices. So which countries do you think have suffered the most?
Okay, I'll start by the first part of your question. Yes. Because when you look at it, when you look at the MENA region, you don't have only oil and gas producers or rich oil and gas producers. You have countries like Jordan, like Morocco, who import energy. Even a country like Egypt, which is not really an oil producer, imports oil. So the answer to your question, I would say all of them will suffer. Mm-hmm. The obvious one is the oil and gas producer, foreign revenues. But countries which also rely, and some of them heavily, on remittances from their worker in areas like the GCC, who rely also on investment or foreign aid from the GCC countries, those countries will suffer as well. If we want to go to the specifics in terms of what countries are going to suffer the most or are suffering the most, what you have to do, you have to take the countries which are heavily reliant on oil and gas revenues and with large populations. You end up with countries like Iran, Algeria, and Iraq.
Mm. Yeah, so that's a very, very clear, and I'm not surprised you say that, but perhaps let's be more optimistic, you know. Where are the growth prospects? And perhaps a more difficult question, you know, which sectors do you think you are expecting to see faster growth coming from? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yes. Although it's a difficult question to answer, but you have to put everything into perspective and everything has to be relative. I don't think we should have the same framework of predicting gas demand growth the way we used to do it not so long ago. Rapid growth, the Middle East having one of the largest gas growth demand in the world. We have to look at things again. So in terms of where are the growth areas, I would say if you take countries, for example, you have to look at countries where there hasn't been significant penetration of natural gas use in the country. In terms of sectors, it's always boring. It's always the same thing. It's the power sector. It's the power sector which thing. But having said that, we need to be very careful when it comes to power. You have to account for the fact that in some countries like Jordan and Morocco, renewable energy are taking an increasing share of the energy mix, and even coal and nuclear is entering the energy mix. UAE, for example. Go ahead.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's a changing demand picture. Well, look, the paper obviously is discussing MENA's natural gas trade. So can we just perhaps move on to that in the next part of this podcast? Let's start with the exporters, you know, which are the countries who are exporting gas in MENA?
Okay. If you look at the statistics, you know, the club of MENA energy gas exporter, you have about maybe seven exporters. But when you look at the numbers, when you look at the stats, it's clear that two countries, Qatar and Algeria, dominate the export scene in the Middle East region, about or maybe over 80%. If you look at 2019. Another thing, not Qatar and Algeria, but other exporters are also exporters and importers of natural gas.
Mm. Okay, and so some of them are that. And who are the primary importing countries? You mentioned earlier on Kuwait. Yeah. I see Bahrain is starting to import. What other ones have we got?
Bahrain hasn't started. I mean, the terminal is ready, but they haven't really started yet. Okay. Now, in terms of importers, we have something like 10 importers. That was in 2019. The largest importer of natural gas are the UAE, Kuwait, and Iraq. Last year, they accounted for about 75% of total gas imports.
Right. Okay, so let's look to the future now, because in your paper, you set out some preliminary prospects for MENA gas imports in 2025. So can you tell us a bit about those and how they're different from kind of 2019?
Yes. You have to specify, David, but those are, we're talking about net imports. I was referring to net imports. If you look at net imports, these are, again, preliminary estimates looking at the existing importers. The estimate for 2025 is something like 32 BCM. When you compare that to net imports in 2019 of 25, yes, if you look at it in terms of percentage terms, yes, it's 30% over, but in volume terms, it's 7 BCM. You and I know that by global, this is not a lot. And that's why later in the paper I mentioned the fact that if you really want to talk about an expansion or an improvement of MENA, intra-MENA trade, you really have to get into the big, the large consuming countries like Saudi Arabia, for example.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I expect to answer the next question, but I'd like just to confirm it with you, because earlier on we talked about the LNG, or sorry, the gas exporters markets are collapsing. You know, so I expect, my question was, can intra-regional gas markets compensate for the loss of those export volumes, maybe to Europe, from Europe and Asia? And I expect the answer is no, isn't it?
No, the answer is no. And you know, but what happens in dire times, anything will help. And that will help you reduce, you know, the impact, the negative impact. So that's why I look at it, even under an optimistic scenario, it's not going to compensate for the loss of market in Europe and Asia.
Well, for the next two questions, they're probably going to be the most difficult ones, because I want to talk about Iran and I want to talk about East Med.
Sure.
So why do we take, exactly, so why do we take Iran first? And of course, you know, it is a difficult issue. So, you know, do you think we could see the current market situation improve relations between Iran and its neighbors?
Now, when you talk about Iran, the dominant, you know, factor right now is the international sanctions imposed upon Iran. Yeah. As long as you have those in place, it's going to be difficult to talk about Iran not only exporting, but before exporting, they have to work on the upstream as well. So it's difficult to see any kind of opening. I would say it could get worse. Let me explain. Yeah. Iran now exports gas and electricity to Iraq. And they do that under regime of waiver, U.S. government waiver. Now, this waiver has been used several times, and the last one, I don't remember exactly, I think last month before, the US said, we won't be renewing it. So you could be in a situation where Iran won't be able to export to Iraq.
Yeah, that would actually be quite fundamental.
So the answer to your question, it may get worse before it gets better.
Well, let's move to the next difficult place, and that is the East Mediterranean, of course. And has the situation become worse for the possible development of Israeli and Cyprus reserves? What do you think?
Actually, it is worse for Cyprus. Because Israel, as you know, they have started, you know, producing and exporting from the Leviathan field. That's in addition to Tamar. And they have contract in place. If you look at the contract, the volume under the contract for export to Egypt and Jordan, if I remember well, it could give you an average of 9 BCM per annum, which is not bad by ISMED, you know, context. But if you look at the ISMED region, it's not rosy. It's far from being rosy. You have a region, a basin, which has large potential reserves or resources that go well beyond what the local market can absorb.
Right. Interesting. Well, look, let's talk now about the two major exporters, which you mentioned earlier on, namely Qatar and Algeria. So let's start with Qatar. I think in this period today where, of course, market prices are so low, I think the question a lot of people are asking is, you know, can Qatar cover its full costs of production and export in the major East and West markets? You know, what do you think of that?
Well, if you're asking about cost, I mean, as you know, cost information are not available in the public domain. But if you take Qatar, for example, it's clear that it's one of the most competitive source of supply. If you look at Algeria, it's still competitive. It is normally a competitive source of supply to its traditional export market, Europe or Southern Europe. But if you look at the catastrophic path of gas prices, Algeria is going to suffer, or is suffering already.
Interesting. And Algeria, as you said, is a similar picture. They're just going to suffer and suffer.
And with a large population. much larger than Qatar.
Yeah, that's about. So what's going to happen there, do you think? You know, are we going to find, is it going to be self-fulfilling? Is it going to be just a downward spiral of lack of investment due to low prices? Or is someone going to break the mold of the situation? What do you think?
I mean, right now, countries which have relied, like Algeria, on oil and gas export, in the case of Algeria, over 95%, will go through a very difficult transition period. And I'm afraid there's no other option. I mean, you look at other countries, they may have other sectors that they may. But in the case of Algeria, it's going to be very difficult. And in fact, as recently as yesterday, I think the energy minister was saying that we are revisiting our gas export policy. It's about time.
It is about time. Now, the other thing, of course, that's faced the Middle East is the issue of subsidized prices in the region. Now, reading your paper, you know, I thought it was actually quite optimistic about domestic prices and how they've risen in some countries. Now, which countries specifically are actually addressing the issues of low domestic prices and subsidized prices?
Actually, David, I've been saying that for a number of years, maybe, or maybe it's not about pessimism or optimism. It's about reality.
Yeah.
We are in a situation where, I mean, government, especially in the Middle East or North Africa as well, they're acutely concerned about the heavy financial burden of subsidies. And they have been gradually reforming the subsidy. But before I go to the name of the countries, or you should ask me about countries, we have to be careful about what we mean by subsidy, because it takes an interesting turn in today's market. If you talk about subsidy, you have those who say that the subsidy should be based on international market prices, opportunity cost. If you look at Middle East producers, they insist, or they used to insist, on the fact that it has to be on the cost of producing the product, the commodity. And they have been some kind of, you know, disagreement about how, what is the magnitude of the subsidy. But oddly enough, in today's market, if you look at the cost of production, or try to estimate the cost of production from new sources of supply in the Middle East, i.e., you know, offshore gas, sour gas, and unconventional gas, it is more expensive to produce than the market price internationally. Yeah. And in terms of countries, you know, the countries that have reformed or increased, you have Egypt, Oman, UAE, and Jordan.
Yeah. It is a fascinating region, which is why it's, you know, I have to say, I urge our listeners to read your paper in it, which you'll be able to go far more detail than we're able to on this podcast. Well, just before I get to kind of my wrap up, a standard question of looking to the future, I would like to address one issue. And that is something you actually raise in your paper that could be a restrictive factor for growth on interregional trade in MENA, and that is infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So while on one hand you say that in the short to medium term there could be enough gas import infrastructure to accommodate potential additional gas supplies, you know, you're also saying infrastructure could be an issue. So could you perhaps explain what you mean?
Yes. If you look at natural gas export or potential export, if you look at only the existing importer, there's no problem of infrastructure. But if you want to expand, you have and reach the largest gas-consuming areas, you definitely have to invest in new infrastructure. And you cannot do it right now in today's investment climate.
And that's a really interesting observation, you know. So we are actually, of course, going to be facing a problem in the future where growth is potentially possible, but the infrastructure is not in place. Well, look, Mustafa, as always, we've had a fascinating discussion, but I do like to end up always looking kind of forward by asking, you know, where's it all going to end up? You know, in a region with growing gas supply and domestic demand and export market challenges, what is the end game going to be? You know, is enough political will to overcome the political tensions and rivalries in the MENA region going to be there to allow more interregional gas flows? You know, what is your view? What's your last word on this?
Yeah. I mean, the adverse economic impact, economic and financial impact of the current crisis on the MENA region, these are going to impose some kind of economic pragmatism, and that is bound to really prevail well and overcome political tension and rivalries. And I could say that that will lead to some regional economic integration, some efforts here and there, and that includes intra-MENA gas trade. Now, I would like to add something. The impact on the MENA region, we're talking now about the short term to the medium term, and of course, some countries will suffer, some countries suffer less than others. But this crisis, you have to keep in mind, will have long-lasting effect on the Middle East economies. And the impact, this impact will, to me, will accelerate economic reforms. You will have, you know, not only on the gas sector, but the energy sector in general. And finally, I could say that if you look at the future dynamics of gas balance in the MENA region, these are going to be reflecting what we see in terms of ongoing transformation, economic transformation.
Well, Mustafa, I think, you know, we finish this podcast on a lovely positive note, which I really like. So look, Mustafa, thank you so much for your time. You know, I've really enjoyed our conversation, as always, that builds upon the messages from your recently published paper, MENA, Could Interregional Gas Trade Be Refocused as a Result of the Ongoing Global Crisis? And I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity, or China programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.